A special episode of BulaNetwork.com. Hey kids, Randy Cantrell coming to you from the Yellow Studio in Dallas, Texas. This is BulaNetwork.com. Yeah, that's the website, BulaNetwork.com. Hey, stay updated. Plug in your email address. You can just plug it in that box there. Click subscribe and I will send you a free video. Be an aspirin, not a vitamin. Yeah, it's the free video. It's what they call the ethical bribe. It's fully ethical. I'm not sure how much of a bribe it really is, but I would greatly appreciate it. I'm glad that you're here. I don't know how you found me, but I'm rather glad that you did. And I hope to, I just hope to dazzle you. It's always the goal. Bula Network is all about helping people in the art of being remarkable. We primarily help small business owners, solopreneurs. Small business, I get asked quite frequently, well, what's your definition of small business? It's not so much a revenue thing for me as it is kind of a flat organization chart. Lots of people. Lots of committees, lots of different folks that have to put their stamp of approval on something. Yeah, that ain't it. That's not small business. It's not the small business that I choose to work with. I'm rather fond of small business because the power and the strength of small business is to speed. I mean, it's just speed. Now, there may be a lot of people who try to tell you that there are a lot of things more important than speed. I'm not sure that's true. I don't deny that there may be some things that are as or more important than speed, but I rather suspect that there aren't many things. I've lived my professional life with a number of philosophies, none of the least of which is the need for speed. And I have long argued for decades. I have argued, get enough information, make a decision, act on it, and then pay close attention and continue to react and adjust, morph, improvise, tweak, plug in whatever word you like. And then make another decision and then continue to do that. And if you'll do that quickly enough, if you'll do that efficiently enough, what you will find is you will find that your nearest competitor, by the time they've made their first decision, you're likely on decision number 4. And how much better do you suppose decision number 4 is over decision number 1? Well, it's remarkably better, I can assure you. And that's possible. It's possible that you could act with speed and you could be an idiot and you could not learn some things and you could take another decision and you learn nothing along the way. But my money says that you can make a pretty smart decision with incomplete data, incomplete knowledge, and then refine that decision with future decisions. And you can make a ton of progress. Meanwhile, across town, your arch rival, well, we've got more information. We just don't have enough information yet. We've got to gather more information. And once we get this piece of information, we'll be better equipped then to make a decision. And then something else drags on and on and on and on. Yeah, you've seen it. I'm real fond of that first group, and I'm way yonder not fond at all of the latter group. So for me, small business, Small business is the former group. Small business is the group. They're willing to make fast decisions. Yes, they want to make the very best decisions they can, but okay, if we've got 70% of the data and we realize that it's not complete, but we feel like we know enough. We feel like we know enough to make a good decision, and we're going to make a decision. Right, give me those people all day long. I'm attracted to that mindset. I'm attracted to those kind of people. Solopreneurs typically fall into that category as well. So solopreneurs and small business owners, entrepreneurs that are bent for speed and driven to be remarkable. It could be that you are already remarkable, but maybe there's a new level of remarkability that you've just not quite met. I am finding clients that do have certain things in common, and that really is why this is a special episode, because I kind of want to pull the curtain back just a bit and share some information about what we do, how we do it, and kind of why we think what we do. I am Bula Network. Bula, by the way, is a Fiji term. If you haven't heard that story, briefly, a Fiji term that's analogous to aloha in Hawaii. It means both hello and goodbye, and I'm told it means life, and in particular, it carries with it the connotation that life is good. We think it is. I think it is. And part of our goal, a big part of our goal, a huge part of our goal, is to try to help people make their lives better. Now, I'm not a life coach. I don't even know that I would consider myself so much a business coach. What's the difference between a coach and a consultant? I'm the wrong guy to ask. I'm just a guy who tries to help other business people find a way through. More and more I find myself using, and don't ask me why, it's not like I'm a surfer, but I find myself using surfing analogies. You know, I really am, this is the honest truth, I really am trying to help small business catch bigger waves. Does that make sense? I think it does. Even if you're not a surfer, doesn't that kind of make sense? Okay, let's talk about, there are so many counterintuitive things that are just truths. They are just absolute truths. And today I kind of want to hone in on this one, but there are three components to this one. And here's how it goes. Focus on a group that is small. Focus on a group that you love, and focus on a group that you're good at serving. Counterintuitive. Why? Well, it has that word small. Now, I've already used the word small when it comes to small business, and I've already told you kind of how I view small, and when I think about a small business, what I think of. Now, you could think of something else. Now, there are some definite common denominators here with small business. Typically, small business isn't crazy high revenue, but who's to determine what crazy high revenue is? I mean, small business could be $30 to $50 million businesses. $30 to $50 million businesses that operate like they're $5 million businesses, in the sense that they make quick decisions. They don't feel like they have to just run everything through the gauntlet 45 times before somebody takes an action, and they don't have committees running the show. People are acting with courage and conviction and speed. They're moving forward, and they're making progress, and they're making progress, and they just keep trudging forward and keep moving. I know companies like that. I know some companies in that $30 to $50 million range that don't have a litany of people who bog the decision-making process down. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't have a lot of employees. I don't mean that. But they don't have a whole lot of people that have to say yes or maybe to something before anybody takes a step. You know, they're very, well, I guess in today's vernacular, we would call them very entrepreneurial. Yeah, go figure. Hey, I'm old school. You know, small business. you know, to me, an entrepreneur, well, of course, I grew up in a different era and viewing things a bit differently, but an entrepreneur was typically, back in the day, it was typically somebody who started something. They had a clear vested interest financially, and they were responsible for the financial outcome. That's really what an entrepreneur, that's really what it means. You take ownership. You take a responsibility, in this case particularly, a financial responsibility for the outcome. But old school entrepreneurs were guys that started businesses, but you know what? Really didn't want to run them. They were more interested in taking a company from idea to birth to, okay, now we got to find somebody to run this thing because you know what? I don't want to do that. I want to be on to the next thing. And so back in the 70s, you know, when I kind of started cutting my teeth in the business world, that was really, those were the guys and the gals that we considered to be real entrepreneurs. They started companies, they got them launched, they got them on their feet. And then they found somebody either to sell the thing to, or they brought in professional management, and then they moved on and they did it again and again and again. Now, I'm not saying that's how it has to be, but I'm just giving you historical perspective on my part. The cool thing about the word entrepreneur is it does mean, I mean, you can't use the word without thinking responsibility. And to me, that's the cool thing. So small business, I don't want to be small. You know, I want to be big. And so when we talk about focusing on a group that is small, well, that alone is counterintuitive. I don't want to focus on a small group. I want to focus on a big group. I jokingly say to people, you know, who doesn't want to invent the next fork? You know, we want to invent sliced bread. Well, we don't want to invent something that's got, you know, the market is really narrow. The market is really thin. No. You know, because we all like to get out our Excel spreadsheet or our calculator, and we like to think about, okay, how many people are there in America? Okay, there's this million people. If we could just, you know, if we could sell a 10-cent something or other to everybody, think about how much money we would have. Those are great mind games, but that's really all they are. Mind games. Focus on a group that is small. Yes, that's counterintuitive. Now, focus on something that you love might not be counterintuitive, but in some cases it could be, because it's possible. It's possible to think, well, you know, I love this, and there's, you know, how could I possibly make a living at that? I'm going to have more to say about that in a second. And focus on something that you're good at. In other words, focus on this small group and focus on something that you love. And I'm going to put two aspects to that. Focus on that small group and focus on a small group that you love. But yes, absolutely focus on something that you do love to do. And then focus on a small group that you're good at serving. That each of these components, if you hadn't figured it out by now, each of these has a who aspect. That is, who do you want to work with? Who do you want to help? Who do you want to serve? Who do you want your customers to be? But they also have at their heart, they also have kind of a what factor. And the what factor is, well, that's your factor. That's what are you going to do? And you clearly want to do the things that you want to do. You clearly want to avoid doing those things that you absolutely hate doing, that you can't stand doing. And you want to do the things that, well, the things that you're good at. Now, let's break all this down, because this all presents a world of problems that I find are commonplace no matter if a business is 30 years old or 3 months old, a business that is doing $30 million or a business that is doing $300,000 a year. Focus on a group that is small. that you love and that you're good at serving. The first thing is really kind of an identifier. And until we know who we are and until we know who we're trying to serve, well, we're just kind of lost. And a lot of businesses today are lost. A lot of would-be business owners are lost, and a lot of existing business owners are lost. And they're lost, very honestly, because there's some things that they haven't figured out. Maybe they've not spent enough quiet time. Maybe their business has just kind of, well, in some cases, their business has just grown to the place where it runs their life. I was joking with a business owner the other day, and I've made this analogy before. You know, it's that age-old moniker, be careful what you wish for because you might get it. And I teased with him, and I said, yeah, you're like that dog that loves to chase the car, and all of a sudden the car stops, and the dog just doesn't. Now, okay, now what? You know, this completely changes everything. Wasn't planning on you stopping. You know, I just thought I'd chase you. You know, the fun was in the chase, and now that the car stopped, well, this game isn't any fun anymore. But sadly, there are business owners who began with a passion, who began with some quest, and their business has grown, their business took off, and over time, it kind of morphed, and maybe it changed a little bit. Maybe it didn't change at all. But over the years, what they have found is they really are no longer the small business owner. The business really now owns them. I can't tell you how many sad business owners I have talked with through the years who have confided and freely confessed that what they've got is they've got a job. And they've got a job that they don't particularly love, and a job that they can't seem to find their way out of. A job that, in their estimation, doesn't have any exit plan. And it's a sad, sad place to be. I don't want you to get there. Focus on a group that is small, a group that you love, and that you're good at. So, you've got an existing business or you have a startup. Doesn't matter. You got to figure out a group that is small. Now, we're talking about business, and so this small group has got to have some ability to pay. Not only must it have the ability to pay, but it must have the willingness to pay. That is, this must be a market that can be served by offering them something for which they will pay. I could probably, without much effort, I could probably find a small group that's interested in something, and I could probably point to them as an example of a small group that's got high interest, but they might be a group that, you know what? They just don't spend any money. They won't buy anything. They just won't buy anything. So it's important that when we take a look at these groups, these small groups, it's important that we consider, well, they've got to be willing to part with their money. They've got to be willing to see value somewhere in something, and that's hopefully where you come into play. Don't get hung up on small, and don't get hung up on it being too small. Don't get hung up on it being too niche-y. It has been argued successfully by many other people in various blog posts and podcasts and videos all throughout the internet for as long as the internet has been around, and it was even before the internet was around. There are riches in niches. There are riches in going very narrow, because a lot of these very narrow markets, these very narrow niches, a lot of them run awfully deep. And there can be some lucrative money there. Certainly lucrative enough for a small business, certainly lucrative enough for a solopreneur. But let's talk about a group that you love, because this speaks to there are people that you are just attracted to, and there are other people that you are just absolutely repelled by. I will give you a personal illustration, but I'll give you one. I'm a person who is big time given to sarcasm. Now, I know time and place. I'm not just I'm not a person who's just dripping with sarcasm all the time. But I have a great appreciation for sarcasm, and I'm rather fond of it, and I tend to be attracted to people who have an appreciation for sarcasm. Now, the person that is just everything that comes out of their mouth is sarcastic, no. But a person who is never sarcastic, I'm not really attracted to that personality. I mean, part of their sense of humor needs to have some component of sarcasm for me to really connect. Does that make sense? As a result, there are people out there that aren't given to that at all. There are people that are absolutely repelled by sarcasm. A person who can't stand sarcasm is just not somebody that I want to do business with. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be, well, yeah, I am being prejudiced. I'm absolutely being prejudiced. I'm absolutely imposing my own personal prejudice. My personal prejudice being you have some appreciation of sarcasm. If you have no appreciation of it, well, you know, I'm probably not going to like you. You're probably not going to like me, and that's okay. You know, the world's a big place and there's a whole lot of us. So, you know, find somebody that's more your cup of tea. And personally, on my end, I'd rather find somebody who's more my cup of tea. That's what I mean when I talk about finding this small group. Find a group that you can love. There are groups of people that your personality is going to be attracted to. There are groups of people who you will most likely gravitate toward, happily so. And there are probably some other people that you are probably going to repel. And there are going to be people who are going to repel you. Now, there's absolutely no point in trying to serve a market that you're repelled by. And that seems so common sense, I know, but I can't tell you how many people struggle because, well, you've heard the business people who constantly complain that, man, they'd have a great business if it weren't for the employees and the customers. And we make a joke of that, but, you know, there are some cases where that's just absolutely true. I know some businesses. I know some business owners who positively, it's not a joke, they honestly feel that way. You know, they've got this customer problem, they've got that customer problem, and when you start analyzing it, you realize that, you know what, the very people that are your customers, these don't happen to be people that you're terribly fond of. I mean, just from a personality, just from the way that they're wired, the things that they're interested in, the things they talk about, the things that are important to them, you know, has it ever dawned on you? You're probably not serving the right group. Now, sadder still, I know some businesses that are successful. They're successful at serving a market that they really don't like. That's pretty sad now. It's just pretty sad for a business to be trapped like that. But maybe that's you. If it's not you, then take great care and consider, you know, who you like to be around and consider who you think might like to have you around. Because it rubs both ways. You know, it's possible. It's hopefully it doesn't happen all that often, but it's possible for you to like a group of people. And for whatever reason, they're just, you know, they just don't much care for you. Usually there's great truth to that phraseology, birds of a feather and all that. Birds of a feather do tend to flock together because, well, we tend to like people who are most like us. Now, it's also why people can find it very difficult to break out of a circle. You may have heard various motivational kinds of folks. I know Jim Rohn used to say it, and perhaps, you know, Zig Ziglar and some others, you know, that you basically are going to be kind of the sum total of these people that you surround yourself with. I understand that, and I don't disagree with some part of that concept, I suppose, but it's also why that's so difficult. It's also why a person who grows up in a certain socioeconomic group, for instance, unless something pretty dramatic happens, say, you know, advanced degrees, and it puts them on a trajectory in a profession that's just was never before considered in their family history, it's very difficult for many people to break out from where they're at. If a person grows up in a rather low socioeconomic area and that's kind of their frame of reference, and there's, I think I personally have a, my personal conviction is that there's a whole lot of other things at work there. I think there's a lot of things happening in that person's head. I think that person, their entire frame of reference in their life is gauged on their world. And for them to see a different world, to know that there is a different world, is just, it's a bit fantasy for them. And I think there's a big, big part of that. There's little doubt that our minds can be very, very self-limiting. It can be for all of us. But it's also, I think, it's also why it can be very difficult to break out of a circle, because we tend to gravitate toward people we're comfortable with. And it may be that the people we're comfortable with, you know what, maybe, you know, if we're struggling, maybe they struggle. And we're just, we're comfortable because we're around other people who are like us. We're all struggling together. And so to go hang out with people that are successful and people that aren't struggling, well, that might not be terribly comfortable if you're struggling and these other people are not. And there's a litany of other things that can enter in. Things like jealousy, envy, hatred. And so the person who's not successful but would like to be and begins to make some acquaintances with people who are successful soon finds themselves not being so much guided by, you know, this is a different kind of a group and there's a different kind of a vibe and they're all pretty positive and they're all pretty vibrant. But no, it can turn to resentment. It can turn to, these dirty, rotten scoundrels. I'm over here struggling. They're not having a hard time at all. And we've seen it. We've all seen it. Pay close attention to that who. Pay close attention to not only the who that you want to serve, but who are you? And who do you want to be? It's a valid question. Who do you want to be when you grow up? And it doesn't matter if you're 54 like I am, or if you're 14, who do you want to be when you grow up? And just because you are somebody today doesn't mean that that's who you're going to be a year from now, 2 years from now, 4 years from now. I mean, on a personal note, I'll tell you, I still feel like I'm morphing. I still feel like I'm adapting. I've made some huge changes over the course of, you know, the last few years in my life. And, I think I'm kind of always seeking a certain degree of reinvention, but I'm attracted to that. I'm kind of attracted to change and adapting and all of that stuff. So, you know, I'm a guy who came from the offline world big time, and I'm morphing more and more and more and increasingly in this online space. And there's little doubt I have aspirations to grow this online aspect of what I do. And it's entirely possible now because we have the internet. And so the things that were limited before, they're not limited now. I mean, before, if you were going to go help somebody, you know, you went to them, you sat in their office, you walked their operation, and you took a look at things, you made some recommendations, and maybe you flew back home and made other recommendations, and you had follow-up phone calls and follow-up visits, and now stuff can be done virtually and online. And the only time people ever even see each other is Skype video. You may work with people that you never meet. You never, ever meet. That wasn't possible before. And a group that you're good at serving. And boy, this one comes up and bites almost everybody. Because we tend to, well, we know what we know, and we tend to not think, well, I have found two groups. I have found more people, most people, fall into the group of not believing that what they know is all that special, all that different, all that unique. And it could be, and we are in a world today that is driven by Wikipedia and Google, and come on, the days are gone where for you to be in the cream of the crop, you have to be world class. Let's just define world class as being, let's say, in the top 1%. The top 1% of whatever it is that you do. Do you believe that you have to be in the top 1% of know-how, of knowledge, to really be world class today? It depends on the world. It depends on the world. It depends on this group that you're seeking to serve. I mean, the fact of the matter is, take a classroom teacher, and if a classroom teacher is just trying to teach facts and trying to pound facts into a kid's head, which is a poor model, by the way, but if that's the objective, there's no need for a teacher. You don't need a teacher. Give a kid an iPad, give a kid a smartphone, give a kid a laptop, and give that kid Google or Bing, and you're good to go. The answer is only seconds away. You've seen that commercial, the lady, she's got an iPhone, and she's sitting in a chair, and there's a guitar on the wall, and there's a big chess set, and she's got all this stuff, all this booty around her, right? And a radio station. They've got a contest, and they're asking a question. The question is, you know, something like the deepest lake or something in North America or whatever. And she's buying time. Oh, that's hard. That's, you know, you would give me a hard one. And then, bam, you know, Crater Lake. She answers it. That's how it is. That's how fact-finding happens in today's world. That's how it happens in your house. That's how it happens in my house. That's how it happens here in the Yellow Studio. Our fingers do the walking. And no, it's not Yellow Pages anymore. It's we're typing in a search engine, and bam, we've got, not only do we have the answer, we have an answer and another answer and another answer. And these search engines, it's why the logarithms are the way they are. Google wants us to get the most relevant answer to our question, to our search. And people can lament that and go, well, you know, my site got smacked down, and well, you know, too bad. It's what you get for gaming the system. Hey, hats off to Google for doing it the way they're doing it, because they want you to be able to type in whatever you type in and you get the very best results. And don't you want that? Well, of course you do. And because you're able to do that, now the power of the classroom teacher, it's not just the regurgitation of facts. No, now it's about, what does the teacher bring? Now it's about personality. Now it's about delivery. You know, everybody says content is king. That's bull. It's not. Content is not king. And I got news flash for you. Content has never been king. Now, substance. Give me substance over style. No, well, that's never been true either. Sorry. It just isn't. Style matters. Style matters a lot. We pay for style, you know. Here, you want me to illustrate it? I'll give you two names. Kim Kardashian, Lady Gaga. You don't need any more proof than that. So we take a look at, well, what are we good at? You know, I've heard the 10,000 hours to mastery and all this crap, and okay. Something to that? Well, maybe. Maybe. I have seen some hockey players. I've seen some 15, 16-year-old hockey players that were just really, really good. They didn't have anything close to 10,000 hours. You know what I mean? Talent can just, sometimes talent can trump experience. I mean, you mark it down. It just can. But we want something that we're good at. Well, we also want, you got to add this who component here. We're looking to focus on a small group that we're good at serving. Now, that changes the context. I don't have to be world class. You know, the fact of the matter is, do I have to be the world's greatest podcaster? No. I've just got to be entertaining enough, compelling enough, interesting enough for you. And that doesn't diminish me, and it doesn't diminish you. There are some people that you like listening to. You like hearing what they've got to say. You like how they say it. You like the tone of their voice. I mean, there's a variety of things that play into this. It could be, I can't stand this guy. That's cool. In fact, you know what? It's even better, because what it does is it saves us both some time. Because if you don't find me remotely entertaining, I'm not going to find you remotely entertaining either. That just kind of is how it rolls. And so the quicker one of us clicks the stop button, the better. And that's fine. No, I'm not going for that, but it's kind of a natural outgrowth of putting audio content out there, or putting video content, or writing blog posts. You read blog posts all the time, and you read a blog post and you read it and you're like, eh. And other people just go gaga over it. And maybe you look at it and you think, well, what am I missing? You're not missing anything. You're not missing anything. The fact is, there are certain personality types and there are certain kinds of people that think that's marvelous. You don't happen to be one of them. Welcome to the world where there are going to be people that you're going to like. And you know what? Some of those people that are going gaga over that blog post that you kind of shrugged your shoulders at, they're going to look at something that you go gaga over and they're going to go, we don't get it. I mean, what's so great about that? And you're going to think, are you kidding me? How can you miss this? This is brilliant. I've had it happen to me. You've had that happen to you too. This is what's great about the world. There are so many people that you're going to find a group of people that you can resonate with. But the only way that you can do that is, well, you got to do a few things. You got to put yourself out there, but you got to focus on a group that is small and a group that you love and a group that you're good at serving. Now, the great thing when it comes to our businesses basically, the older I get, the more I lean toward this. Think about the musician. Think about the musician who just loves making music. Maybe they love writing songs. Maybe they love playing the songs. Maybe they love both. But music is their thing. They love music. They love writing, performing music. And in the perfect world, especially when they start, man, wouldn't it just be great if we could make a living doing this? Wouldn't it be great if the market would just support us sufficiently so that we could make our living, our livelihood, by doing the very thing that we most love to do? Well, sometimes it happens. Doesn't always happen, but sometimes it happens. And what you find is you find that maybe they've got a small cult. Maybe they got a small cult following. They've got a small little niche that knows them and that loves their work, hangs on their every song. And you know what? It's a group that they love too. And it's a group that they are great at serving. Everybody wins. The artist gets to continue to make music and earn their living by making that music. The audience gets something that no other artist gives them. And maybe there's this tribal connection because of the smallness. Have you ever found an artist and maybe you caught them on the uptick? You caught them before they really caught fire and you just fell in love with them. And then they got popular and you're like, well, you know, they sold out. They've changed. Ah, their stuff's not as good. Has it ever dawned on you maybe their music is as good, if not better, than it was when you discovered them, but maybe you've changed? Maybe you've gone from being one of those small people that knew about them, and they were kind of your little hidden gem, and now that they're a household name, the luster's gone. Sure, I think most of us have felt that way at some time or another. It happens. But I can tell you what I hope for. Here's what I hope for you. And I realize hope is not a strategy, but too bad. Go with me anyway. My hope for you is that you're able to focus on a group that is small, focus on a group that you love, and on work that you love, and focus on a group that you are good at serving. And you can find a way to make a living. Sure. Hey, while we're hoping, let's hope for a lucrative living. That you can make a lucrative living serving that group, loving that group, and having them love you. And all the while, you are doing the work that you love to do. Man, wouldn't that be great? It just doesn't get any better than that, does it? Hey, thankfully, this show might. Thankfully, this show might get better. Hey, I hope I've helped you. I honestly do. You know, I'm not here to just hear my head rattle. Well, kind of. My head does rattle quite a lot. Well, just look at the picture of me on the website, and you'll see why my head rattles. So we'll amp up the music here. Kind of end on high energy, shall we? Hey, the website is Bula Network, BULANetwork.com. That's company name, Bula Network LLC. It's not a network in the sense of all this podcasting and stuff. I'm relatively new at this. I mean, I only started this, I don't know, I started a little over a year ago, I guess, podcasting and stuff. But if you are a solopreneur, if you are a small business owner, and there's anything at all that you think I can do to help you, I'm a guy who really get deeply focused in helping people get unstuck and trying to get to the next level. The tagline, I know, doesn't say it all, and it may not even say it very well, but, you know, who remembers taglines anyway? It is, for me, all about helping people in the art of being remarkable. It's the goal. It's the objective. It's what we're always working toward. I am working on a pilot program. I'm 6-8 weeks into this pilot program with a hand select few people. Trying to figure some things out. Trying to create some things and scale some things that may have a wider appeal. And admittedly, trying to make some things that are cost effective. Because I'm all about high value. I'm a huge, huge bottom line guy. Big believer in return on investment. And so the pilot program is kind of helping me work through some of that. But I'd love to hear from you. You can leave me some audio feedback at 214-736-4406. You can send me an email at results, which is what I'm after, results@bulanetwork.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. This is the Yellow Studio. Thanks for listening.